I once went up to a Dwayne Hansen sculpture and asked it a question. It was a life-size sculpture of a museum guard, but I thought it was a real museum guard. I'm hardly the first person to make that mistake with a Dwayne Hansen sculpture. In fact, once a museum guard, after closing, went up to a sculpture of a man and asked it to leave. When there was no response, the guard called the police. Hansen creates these realistic figures by making body casts of the people who model for him. But what makes the statues look so real is Hansen's uncanny eye for clothing his figures, doing their hair, and giving them the perfect props. A show of his work just completed an American tour and is on its way to Europe. I spoke to Hansen over the summer when his show opened at the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts. Hansen told me museum goers often mistake his sculptures for real people.
They take on a life of their own, and then, I used to get a little upset about that because I consider my work sort of serious work, and then they take it, all the funny things happen, but this is part of dealing with it.
But your work isn't really about fooling people.
No, of course not. And it's about sculpture, first of all, and then communicating my ideas about the human condition in this society.
What I especially like about your work is that each piece seems to be a character study of that person. It's not just a realistic rendering where you go like, boy, that looks real. I mean, mm-hmm. you stare at the person and you feel you have a sense of what their character is. And the character is given to you both from the facial expression and through the way you've combed their hair and found their clothes and painted their complexion.
That's well stated. I really appreciate that. That's really what it's about. It's not exactly, well, it has something to do with portraiture, but it goes beyond that. It goes examining the character, like you say, of the individual to express that alienation or frustration or that fatigue or that sort of emptiness or just immersed in their own thoughts in some way.
I know when I went into the museum, the first thing I started to do was, the first piece I saw was the two tourists, and I went up to them real close, closer than I'd get to any person. Mm-hmm. And I'm like looking at the pores in their face and, looking like the label on their shopping bag and, well, I wonder what camera that is. And, I'm really giving them not just the once-over, but I'm like inspecting, the hairs growing out of their hands and stuff. And I think this is something you've talked about, how we all really want to stare at people, but in real life, there's a limit to how close you can get.
It's a taboo, really. And people can do that here and derive some enjoyment of really studying another person. Driving over here to the station today, I noticed a couple of sculptures that I like to do. There was a policeman at a construction site or whatever. He had a big, burly guy. And with the blue shirt and the cap, the uniform they have here in Philadelphia. And his arms are folded like he's really in an authoritative, he's watching out that, you better watch out. I mean, those things I are imprinted on my brain for months, years sometimes. I thought, I got to do that. I got to get to do that.
When someone catches your attention and you want to do a sculpture of them, what's the next step?
Well,
is that the way it works, that you see somebody
again,
who you want to do?
I have an idea in my head that I've got, a whole list of things that I think would be important to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have an idea of a baseball player now, and I'll get at the model. Model's coming down, and we take Polaroid shots in different positionings, and I pick the best one, and then the model stands in that position. We do molds of the legs and the body and the arms and the head. I have these molds that are filled with plastic material, Bondo, body fillers that they use when you dent your car. The body shops fix your car with this stuff. I use that to cast the material out of the molds. And that's assembled. And the forms never come out right for me, so I improve them. Maybe the cheeks sunk in or the nose got pressed in. I build up the nostrils. I fix around the eyes. I think stuff that doesn't come around. That's, that's the sculpturing.
Let's take one of the people in the current show, Queenie, who is the janitor.
Yeah.
Was the woman who you actually cast a janitor herself? In other words, do you cast
sometimes
the person
they are
who,
what they uh-huh. are portrayed, but, mm-hmm. but usually more interested in the physical presence of that person, like mm-hmm. acting in a play,
yeah.
playing a part.
So you cast somebody
yeah.
in the role.
But it probably derives from somebody I've seen like that.
Right.
But, I mean, you can't grab people off the street, I mean, especially when you're traveling around and get them. So I get the next best solution to that
You find
idea.
Someone who looks like mm-hmm. them.
Yeah, right.
Do you shop for clothes when it's time to dress one of your statues?
Oh, yes. That's very important, and it's frustrating sometimes. Sometimes the models will give me clothes from their own wardrobe, mm-hmm. things that they don't want or something that I can buy from them that I know that they'll fit, you know. And also, if they don't have the right attire, I go shopping, and if it's something colorful, I go to Kmart and get the right size, and something would be too, you know, wrong color, the right size, but the wrong color. And I've shopped around for sometimes a week, and sometimes go to the Goodwill or in places where they sell used clothing to get that worn effect. So that's very important too. To get the right clothing is sometimes frustrating too.
Do you ever take a statue with you to make sure that the clothes are going to fit?
No, I don't scare people, I think.
You must have learned a lot about complexions, painting complexions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The skin tone is to look like it's almost translucent. The coloring is just—we use a base coat and then a little bit airbrushing on top. Some of them are painted by hand, and they don't turn out quite as well. They have more of a makeup look. It's so delicate, and you know some complexions are more yellow, and some more pink. And black people, there's a lot of yellow, a lot of red, and a lot of kind of a Mars brown color.
There's a self-portrait in your current show.
Yeah.
It's a self-portrait with model. And yeah. it's a sculpture of you at mm-hmm. what looks like a luncheonette table.
Right.
And sitting across the table from you is a woman in a blue and white checked house dress. The house dress is sleeveless, and in the back, her brassiere is sticking out through the sleeveless armhole.
Noticed that.
Yeah. She's pretty overweight.
Yes.
She's reading Arthritis magazine and eating a sundae. There's a copy of Woman's Day sitting on the table mm-hmm. also. Tell me about the scene that this comes from.
Well, I wanted to do a self-portrait, and I didn't want to do an ordinary kind where in art history you see the artist holding a brush, you know, obviously looking into a mirror and painting himself, and or a sculptor carving out something. I wanted to be portrayed as an observer, because that's what I do, basically, more than anything else, and that the work is derived from that. You know, every artist has to do a self-portrait sooner or later, or wants to do it, or I'm sort of glad I did it.
You were, I think, about 42 when you started doing realist sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
Were you doing mostly abstraction before that?
No, I never really got into it. I never felt comfortable with doing abstract work. It was representational work. You could see it was a figure. It was modified to, you know, maybe design, maybe. The features weren't all there, but the part of the character was there, part of the composition was there, and it was carved out of wood or stone or modeled in clay. And I came to the conclusion that, so what? You know, I do this and can do this, but it doesn't really say anything about the human condition. These are works by themselves, each individual one. You have to have sort of a concept of a body of work that will convey, communicate some ideas, some concepts which you have in your head, I think. And that's what I got into when I got into realism, and when pop art came to be accepted, and then realism seemed to be legitimate again. I got into it, and then one thing led to another. I did 67, I guess it was, a group of four dead shoulders and one dying to express my protests about the war in Vietnam. I did a race riot, about five sculptures in that, and then moved to New York in 1969. I did a group of derelicts off the Bowery. And then that evolved into more critical types with my first tourists and dressed out in rather outlandish attire, a supermarket shopping lady with her cart. And now I do more illusionistic types, not so much manipulating of exaggeration and so on of the subject.
When I look at your sculptures, I feel like I recognize everybody. I've seen people who I know or who I've met who are very much like them. I wonder if you feel sometimes in art that we're still not quite at the point where a lot of just like real people, ordinary people, are represented. I mean, I wonder if you still feel that mostly in art, people are still idealized.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah. And I think that's one of the major attractions to my work. That these are people that they've seen, that they know, that they recognize, and that they really have come to life.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
Artist Wayne Hansen.